Rainmaker.fm is brought to you by the Rainmaker Platform, a complete website solution for content marketers and online entrepreneurs. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at RainmakerPlatform.com.
Hey everyone, Brian Clark, and we are here again today with another episode of Rainmaker FM. Today is another one of our special interview episodes, and I'm very pleased to have today as a guest Pat Flynn of Smart Passive Income. I was just kind of ruminating with Pat before we started the interview that I've been aware of him forever, and yet we've never met. We've never really got a chance to talk. And I decided that what better way to end that dry spell than to have him on the show, because I think his story is inspirational. I think it's instructive, and I think it's fascinating. But I also think, in line with the theme of these interviews, people who have successfully built audiences, what do you do then? What's next? And how did they get here in the first place? Which I think for many of you is kind of key. So join with me in welcoming Pat Flynn. Pat, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Brian. I'm super stoked to be here on Rainmaker FM. And I think it's really cool that we finally got to meet on a podcast of all places. Podcasting has been huge for me lately. We'll get into that, I'm sure. But it's just, you know, amongst other things, it's just a fantastic way to meet people. So I'm truly honored to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's interesting. At Copyblogger, we have kind of this mantra that everything is content. So if you want to get to know someone, in my mind, you know, why not also share it with everyone else? Because Robert and I always have these conversations where we'll reflect back and, you know, we're like, we should have been recording this. This is actually good stuff. So going forward, if there's someone I want to speak with, you know, for example, our last show was with Jay Baer, and I've been friends with him forever. But rather than just getting on the phone with Jay and say, hey, what are you doing? Where are you going? Catch me up. Why not make it into a podcast? And that's exactly what we did. So again, thank you for being here. And like I said, you've been in the game since about 2008, and it's kind of ridiculous that we haven't spoken before, but I am mostly intrigued in hearing your story in your own words. Now, I've got the general gist of what happened with the layoffs that affected so many people at that time, and instead of maybe dwelling on defeat, you took that as an opportunity to do something else. And take us back and tell us what happened, how you got here, all of that good stuff. But I'm really interested in hearing how you had such a positive mindset in the face of adversity.
Sure. Well, it definitely wasn't always a positive mindset after getting laid off. I, for a couple of weeks, went into, you know, a state of depression, just didn't know what I was going to do. I'd spent my whole life getting ready to become an architect, and I was working at a great firm in Irvine, California. And all of a sudden, you know, after a few months after getting promoted, actually, I get called into the office and they tell me that they're going to let me go. This is in summer of 08. And it just killed me. Like, I had no plan B. I thought this was a secure thing. My first reaction was actually to call every single architecture firm in like a 20-mile radius and then call all my friends, all the contractors that we've ever worked with, and just beg and plead for a job, because I was really scared. I didn't know what else to do. I had no other life. And luckily, I had a few months till they were actually officially going to let me go, because I was a job captain. I had a few clients who I just couldn't leave. And so they wanted to sort of transition me out slowly. And so during those 3 months, you know, going to work every day just to make a few extra dollars here and there, was just, I dreaded it every single day. I mean, why would I want to go into work? I didn't do any work, to be honest. But I did discover podcasts at that time. And it was at that time I discovered a podcast where I heard an interview from a guy telling his story about how he was making six figures a year teaching people how to pass the project management exam, the PM exam. And that's when a light bulb went off for me, because I had helped myself pass an exam, a really difficult exam in the architecture industry called the LEED exam, L-E-E-D, which is sort of a, you know, making environmentally friendly and safe buildings and things like that.
Right, right.
And to help me pass this test, I created a blog. I had followed blogs. I had started my own blog in college about, you know, what I ate for dinner and what parties I went to and things like that, you know, on the Zanga platform.
Everyone does one of those at least, right?
Right. You won't find it. It's gone. But so I knew that it was a great way to manage content. And I figured, you know what? My handwriting's terrible. I do a lot of traveling. If I post my notes online, it would be a way for me to study and study at work during my lunch hour and all this stuff. So I spent a year just posting content on the site, study tips for me and a few of my coworkers every single day. And for a year and a half, I did that, and I finally passed the exam in March of 08, and I was done with it. I had no more need for it. But when I heard this podcast episode months later, I said, wow, maybe I can take this site that I built for myself and a few coworkers and actually share it with the world. I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't know even the first step, but I do know that I'm going to need to eventually keep track of traffic. So I put Google Analytics on the site. Comments weren't open. There was no need for comments. So I didn't know anybody was on the site. I didn't think anybody was on the site. But the next day when the analytics registered, I saw that there were like 5,000 people who visited the site the previous day from over like 30 countries in the world. And it just blew my mind. Like, people were already coming to the site to help them pass the same exam. I had no idea. I don't even know for how long before that people were coming over. But that's when I opened up comments. People started asking questions that I actually knew the answer to. And even though I didn't know all the answers, I became sort of over time, in a short period of time, this expert. I was one of the only ones actually revealing all of this information about this exam. And to make a long story short, in October of 2008, I published a study guide, an ebook that was delivered digitally. And in that month, I had made $7,908.55, wow, which was from a $19.99 ebook. And this was more money than I'd ever made in my whole life. And it just completely changed my life. So truly, the layoff, which sucked at first, became a huge blessing in disguise, because it sort of opened my world to this online business stuff. And, you know, initially my thoughts about online business before getting into it were like, man, this is a scammy thing. I would never do it. Like, right, people are, you know, they're just trying to suck every dollar. But here I was actually providing value for this audience, selling something, getting paid as a, you know, in return. But in addition to that, getting these amazing thank you letters from people who had taken the exam using my study material and passed the first time, just like paragraphs and paragraphs of thanks. And that is what sort of showed me the business model that I can continue to use today in all of my businesses, which is, you know, your earnings are a byproduct of how well you serve your audience. So that's always for me the primary motive. And from there, actually, just that first month after I launched that ebook, people were like, how did you do this? Like, share everything. I want to know. And I was like, yes, okay. And that's when I created smartpassiveincome.com to share everything that had happened with that business. And ever since then, I've just shared new businesses that I've created, things that I do, and it doesn't always go right, but it's always a lesson. And I think that's really cool. And people have been following along in my journey. And it took about a year and a half for this site to finally take off. And now it's my primary thing. And I have a podcast to go along with it. We just passed 11 million downloads. I have a second podcast to go along with it called Ask Pat. You know, and it's making tens of thousands of dollars a month, primarily through affiliate marketing. I actually don't sell any products of my own quite yet. And the audience I've built and the opportunities that it has provided for me, from book writing to getting on stage and doing keynotes and getting paid to do that, like, it's just unbelievable the path I've been on. And, you know, amongst some of the content that I create, I also create new businesses publicly. And like I said, it doesn't always go right, but it's always a learning experience. And that's why I call myself, you know, the crash test dummy of online business. I'm just so blessed and happy to be that person to show people what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And I do want to talk to you in detail about podcasting, about the new Ask Pat show, about affiliate marketing, all of this kind of stuff, because I think there's a lot to learn there. But I do want to drill down real quick on one thing I noticed on your about page, which really resonated with me, which was, and of course it was harder, and everyone goes through depression and angst and anxiety when something bad happens. But it resonated with me because it's been my personal experience as well. You said getting laid off was the best thing that ever happened to you. So I don't know how much you know of my story, but I had been an attorney and quit in the 90s, and that's when I started online. And I had become an entrepreneur successfully in 99, more as a solo, but really in 2001, 2002, I had a real business and I spun off another one from it. Mm-hmm. But in 2005, I had a snowboarding accident that created a subdural hematoma. I don't know if you know what that is. That's like a life-threatening pool of blood in your head. long story short, I had to have brain surgery, all of this stuff. And I say that was the best thing that ever happened to me. And people look at me like I'm insane.
Right.
But it's not that I became an entrepreneur. After that, I became the entrepreneur I wanted to be instead of what I thought I was supposed to be.
Right.
And this is a big theme in my life, that your own mind really either limits or enables what you're able to do. Did you have this switch? I mean, you created the ebook, and that was really your test case, right? But were right. you driven to do that in the first place, kind of out of desperation, and then you found that this worked out for you?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily desperation, but almost just I had nothing to lose. At that point. And I think that's important.
Nothing to lose is a beautiful place.
Right. Absolutely. Because, I mean, if you try and it doesn't work, well, you're where you were started anyways, but at least you're giving yourself a chance. And that was really big for me, because I think because I didn't have a plan B, because the world of architecture wasn't letting me back in, I took risks that I wouldn't normally have taken. And I always ask myself, wow, what would have life been like if I didn't get laid off? Would I be going down this path? And I know the answer would be no way. I wouldn't have pushed myself to try these things. And it was that layoff and the not being able to get back into the industry that pushed me in this direction. And I'm so, so thankful for it. And it's funny, because your story and my story, I mean, it's a very common story when people go through these tragic moments in their life. You know, amazing things happen on the other side of it typically. And so now I actually look for that fear. And whenever I see it, that is mostly a sign that I know something amazing is on the other end. That's why I started my podcast, even though I was deathly afraid of getting on the microphone and I hate my voice. That's why I got on video, because I just knew I was nervous. So I knew something amazing was going to happen if I were to conquer it. And now public speaking, which if you asked me a few years ago, I would have never said yes to getting on stage for even in front of, 10 people. And here I am speaking in front of thousands now. And I have the opening keynote at New Media Expo next year. And it's just, man, it's just crazy what happens when you actually, believe that you can do this stuff. Like Henry Ford says, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I am far from the Pollyanna rah-rah motivational type, but I really do try to impress on people that when bad things happen, it's a cliche to say there's a silver lining. There could be a gold lining if you just realize that this may be that moment, where you're supposed to go ahead and throw caution to the wind and chase your dreams. But the main thing for me with the near-death experience is, this is all we've got. This is not a dress rehearsal. We either do it now. You have a great voice, by the way. I don't understand.
Oh, thank you. I think it's the mic. The mic makes me sound a lot better. It's a fairly expensive podcast.
I think everyone hates their voice because you hear it differently inside your head, and it's just not the same thing. Interesting that you mentioned about a fear of public speaking, because I used to be a trial attorney, a young one, so it's not like I was in court all the time, but still, I was deathly afraid of public speaking. And I think ironically that you just said you're keynoting in the fall, that used to be Blog World, and that was my first speaking engagement way back when it started. Me and Darren, a pro blogger, and Chris Brogan, we kind of helped get that rolling, because there wasn't a such thing as a blogging conference really at that time, But yeah, they invited me to speak and I was scared to death, but because I was afraid, I had to do it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It didn't kill me. I can't say I was great, but it didn't kill me. And now, despite myself, I regularly speak, even though I swear every year I'm going to quit because I'd much rather do this, and be at home with the kids and not leave them and all that kind of good stuff. But still, it's always that which intimidates me that I have to conquer just to feel like I'm moving forward as a person.
Right. I mean, it makes me wish that I knew that this was what to do when I was in high school. I would have asked out many more girls. I didn't have...
I'm jealous that you're only 30 years old. I went to law school, got out when I was 27, practiced for 4 years unhappily, and that was 94 to 98, the beginning of the commercial web. And so every night I would go home and stare at that monitor, that ugly beige boxy monitor from the 90s, right? And say, there's got to be a way to make a living. But I sat there and looked at, and thought about it for 4 years, because there were no conferences, there were no blogs, there were no guides. There was just, you know, you had to watch what other people were doing. Mm-hmm. And finally, again, it was that moment of, I'm either going to live my entire life miserable, you know, holding on to my nice salary and my assistant and my private office. You know, from the outside, it looked wonderful. And of course, my parents and my friends thought I was insane. But, you know, you have to do something that makes you happy. And I think some of us, I refer to myself as unemployable just because having a job, I don't think would even do it. It wasn't just law. It was being employed that bothered me, because I enjoy the freedom of doing things my own way. It's not about the amount of money I make necessarily, although that's certainly nice. It was always, can I make a living without answering to anyone except for my audience and my customers? Mm-hmm. Do you feel now that you could ever go back? No. Like if you got that plum architecture job, you would just laugh, right?
Yeah, I mean, funnily enough, in March of 2009, you know, several months have gone by since starting my online business, making tens of thousands of dollars a month. I got a call from my boss who had let me go from the architecture industry. He had went off and started his own firm, took a few people from the firm I was at, and offered me a very, very generous salary, a year's worth of rent for free, and just, you know, the best thing I could ever ask for if you had asked me like 2 years earlier. Now, I mean, it was the best no I had ever said in my entire life. And that's kind of the defining moment when I knew that this is, you know, like you, I wasn't going to be employable anymore at that time.
Yeah, I love that. That's nice. That's a great story. Okay, so 2008 is when Smart Passive Income started, or?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. As a blog, much like Copyblogger started 2 years earlier as kind of a one-man show. And then here's an interesting story that you'll think is funny in a almost dangerously disastrous way. In 2005, when I came out of surgery and everything recovered fine, but I was never going to do anything for money except for in the way I wanted to. My first idea, I don't know if you remember back at that time, but that was the beginning of the podcasting rage that was about 5 to 10 years too early. Remember Adam right. Curry, the MTV mm-hmm. DJ and all that? My original idea was to start a podcast instead of Copyblogger. And I just look back and say, wow, that would have been a disaster, because podcasting wasn't ready for prime time yet. Mm-hmm. And of course, my strength was as a writer. And that's ultimately why I went with it. The ability to teach people what we now call content marketing, I didn't call it that, obviously, at the time, was really the right opportunity. And thank goodness I took it. But still, even when you shifted to podcasting in 2010, it was still early, right? As a form of content marketing, which is effectively what you do. What made you make that move?
Well, at that time, it hadn't yet hit mainstream yet, but there was certain industries like, you know, online business that, you know, it was starting to take off. And I knew that because it was a podcast out there called Internet Business Mastery yes. that I discovered. Jason and Jeremy, I definitely give them credit for a lot of what has happened to me, because I listened to their show every single day on the way to work and on the way back, you know, every single day. And I got a part of their program, and they definitely helped me get a great start. And so I knew a podcast was a great way to deliver content and provide value and help people to take action, which is what I wanted to do. It was funny because in December of 2008, I actually wrote a blog post. This was just a couple months after starting the blog, saying and announcing that I was going to start a podcast. I had actually bought equipment. I did a little test audio and I had posted it on the blog. December of 2008. I didn't have my first episode published until July of 2010. Mm-hmm. So a year and a half later. And the reason for that was because I was just scared. Like I said earlier, it just took me forever to get over the fact that I had to just do it. And also, at the time, it was quite technical to try and figure out. There weren't any tutorials, and it wasn't necessarily very easy. A lot of, you know, the people who were big into podcasting were tech geeks. Yes. And it was big in the tech geek world, but not so much for people like me. And I finally got some help from Cliff Ravenscraft from podcastanswerman.com, who helped, he was a consultant for me, and he got me up and running, and it just has taken off since then. And yes, it was quite early, but I think that was to my advantage. I just came in at the right time, I think. And now, you know, it's still the wild, wild west out there. It's still very young, and podcasting is growing insane right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so glad to be a part of it right now. My podcast has been done very well, and you know, I'm just one guy in San Diego, and I happen to be ranking in the top 10 of business, and have been for the last 4 years. It's just, I mean, it really evens the playing field, I think, especially because anyone can do it now. And it's just, okay, you got to make good content, though. You have to have great interviews or have great shows to stand out, because now it's going to become like blogging. It's going to become saturated now. So you definitely have to, you know, put your best foot forward and best voice forward as well. And now I have my new podcast called Ask Pat, which is a 5-day a week podcast, sort of inspired a little bit by John Lee Dumas over at Entrepreneur on Fire, who has a 7-day a week podcast. Never thought that was possible, but in talking with him, he lives here in San Diego with me. He was teaching me how he was able to do 7 days a week, and he basically batches everything. He records all of his interviews on Monday, hands them off to a VA, and he or she puts them together so that they come out every single day. And he's months ahead of schedule now, which is fantastic. And so that was inspiration for me to do Ask Pat, which, since launching in March of this year, is approaching 3 million downloads now. Each episode's about 10 minutes in length, and I answer a voicemail question from the audience. They call in using SpeakPipe to leave me the voicemail, and then I just record it, and then I hand it off to my VA or my assistant, who then slices and dices the show and puts it all together. So honestly, to be able to put a whole month of Ask Pat up there just probably takes 4 hours for the whole month. And it's amazing, because now I'm doing sponsorships and getting paid through having, you know, sponsors on the show. So each episode of Ask Pat pretty much makes me around $250 on average. Each episode of the Smart Passive Income podcast, probably about $2,000. And so that alone is enough to supplement my living expenses, even more so. And then I have everything else on top of that too. So it's quite amazing what the podcast has done for me. And then, like I said earlier, it has allowed me to get in contact with people for potential publishing deals, allowed me to get on stage, because there's just something about the voice, you know, that is unlike any other sort of medium. And with podcasting specifically, it's like, okay, people can read a blog post, maybe up to 15 minutes worth. Video, our attention span's even less, maybe 5 minutes, if that. With the podcast, I mean, some of my shows are up to an hour, sometimes an hour and a half. I mean, that much of my brand in the person's life is unlike anything else. And that's why when I go to conferences now, people come up to me who I've never met before, and they call me by my name, and they're like, Pat, like, dude, like, I feel like I know you. Like, I feel like we're friends. Like, you are in my life every single day. And at first, that kind of creeped me out.
Yeah, it can be that way.
Yeah, no, like people before were like, hey, Pat, like, how's your son doing? I'm like, who are you? Yeah, and then I was like, wow, this actually means I'm actually making a true strong connection with people. And it's all because of the podcast.
Yeah. It was interesting to watch you segue into Ask Pat, because that's kind of, I guess, more of an advanced strategy, because you need an audience really to have the questions in the first place. Mm-hmm. But it's also a sign that you've become an authority, whereas in the beginning of your podcast, it's mainly an interview format. Is that correct?
Well, I think it's maybe 60% interview, 40% solo.
When you started, was it primarily Pat teaching or a mix, or primarily interviews?
It was a mix, actually, but now I'm actually headed more into the interview space. With Ask Pat, like you were saying, it's me answering questions. Yeah. And that totally, like you said, just in the eyes of the audience, just puts me at that authoritative level. But beyond that, I think I love it more because, and people have told me this, they hear the voice of people in the audience and they can relate to that. And then I come in and answer. So they feel like they're not alone. I might answer their question, even though somebody else asked it for them, and they feel more involved.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, this ask format is just exploding in popularity. You've got Ask Gary V. You've got, I think,
Ask Altucher.
Exactly. Right. So
he actually asked me if that was okay, if he could do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How nice of him.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. He's like, I don't want to take, you know, I know your Ask Pat was like the, sort of the first one out there. I was like, dude, do it. And everybody's doing it now. There's like an Ask Jason, Ask Dr. This. And I think it's so cool. I mean, it's definitely a great strategy. I don't mind people adopting it.
It reminds me of an earlier strategy. Everything comes around in new formats. But in the IM world, like pre-2005, everyone had an Ask thing. But it was primarily, it was different. It wasn't the podcasting format, which to me is a much more intimate, like you said, you really get to know people. It's all that, you know, my writing style comes across in a way that I think is very decisive and yet not as warm. And when either I meet people in person or they listen to me in audio, they're like, oh, you seem much nicer. I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure how to take that, but you know, but it's true. It's a different medium. It is so much more warm and personable and relatable, I think.
The Ask format you mentioned, how it sort of is adopted to podcasting, is really interesting because, you know, the sort of AMAs or Ask Me Anythings on Reddit are always really popular. And like you said, it's sort of just enhancing that experience through the voice here.
Yes, absolutely. So you've touched on a couple things that I want to elaborate on. In many ways, especially with podcasting, as you've evolved now into more than one show, you've been a trailblazer, and I've seen your influence. You know, it's sometimes it's unmistakable, and other times it's, you know, as simple as someone like James saying, "Hey, I love your format. You mind if I steal that?" You know, I mean, but then again, you and James couldn't be any more different, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So you mentioned
crazy hair.
Yeah, exactly right. So you mentioned, and I, of course, you are incredibly transparent with your sources of income. You do monthly income reports. You do create your own sites. You show how, you know, effectively you find a niche. You, like you said, you focus on satisfying the needs of that audience and they give you money. It's an amazing thing. And I've seen many examples of the various niche sites that you've created, and they are income generating. But ironically, a big chunk of your income comes from what I call aspirational affiliate marketing, in that I'm Pat, I produce this site and this podcast and now this new podcast, and here are the things I use to do that, right? Mm-hmm. And that turns into, and because of course there are affiliate programs tied to many of those products, you make a lot of money from that. I mean, effectively, I'm saying that people want to be like you. They want to do what you're doing, and that in itself has become a source of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of act like you were surprised about that when that actually took the lead in revenue.
I was, because, you know, I was sort of just sharing what I did and reporting on it and, you know, getting involved with other companies that, you know, I could potentially earn an income from through commissions and affiliate marketing. It just, you know, took off. And, you know, I was surprised at how well it did. I knew people were going to go through those links because I was there providing value and not saying you have to go through this, but hey, this is just what I use if you want to go.
Well, there's nothing more credible. I mean,
you're
not selling something for the commission. You're selling something. Well, they're buying what you use. That is a credible source of marketing in my mind.
Right. And I feel like if they're going to buy anything anyway, you know, I might as well make sure that it's something that I know is going to be helpful and valuable to them. And whether they choose to go through my affiliate link or not, that's up to them. I feel like the main purpose is just helping a person achieve whatever it is their goals that they want to achieve. And in the course of doing that, whether it's free content or paid content or your product or somebody else's product, whatever the case may be, you just got to share it. And so, you know, on my resource page, for example, which is my most profitable page on my site, about 50% of my revenue actually comes from that page.
Yep.
You know, people go there looking for tools that are going to help them. And I have used all of them and I have, you know, commented on all of them. Some of them have videos and tutorials on how to use those things. And a lot of those things don't have an affiliate income. They're just there to help. And it's, again, going back to what I said earlier, your earnings become a byproduct of how helpful you are. And I know, you know, in this space, it's interesting because it's IM and you know, I'm selling, like you said, you know, these products that people want to use to do what I do. And that's something that was actually, you know, to be honest with you, a little bit hard for me to understand at first, because, you know, I can share the tools, but people have to put in the work.
Yes.
And that is, I don't know, it's like, how can I make sure people do the work? You can't, but you can show them the path and hopefully help them and be motivated to use those tools in the right way. And I'm very lucky that I have a very transparent audience with me too, who a lot of them share their success stories. And, you know, I think a lot of why my brand has grown is because people do use the strategies that I share, have found success in different levels, and do share and spread the word for me too.
Yeah. And let's talk for a second. And this is something I kind of brought up with you before we got on the air, because I found one example that is so remarkable to me of someone who has followed the Pat path that, and he happens to live in the same town as you. And he happens, you mentioned him early, John Lee Dumas, right? Mm-hmm. So I follow both of you guys, and I'm like, I look at John, who started after you, obviously. And I look at his, you know, his avatar on Twitter, and I look at yours with the, you know, you've got the smart passive income little bot. What is that thing, by the way, on the little microphone?
It's called a mic flag. You know, you see it on newscasts and things.
Yeah. I love that. That's great. So he has his for Entrepreneur on Fire. He does income reports like you. And as you mentioned, you know, afterward, he's followed your path, and yet there are two things that you've already mentioned are necessary, or in my mind, I think also are necessary, in that you got to do the work and you still have to have your own voice, right? Mm-hmm. So John is someone who I think has followed your path incredibly step by step, you know, in the sense that if it isn't broke, don't try to fix it. And yet, as you pointed out, John works like a maniac. There, no one would ever fault him for not putting in the work. But also, he has his own unique voice. When it comes down to it, no one's going to confuse you for him.
Right.
So you both live in San Diego, and you were actually the first guest on his show. Is that correct? Tell us a little bit about that.
I was actually. I met John in Las Vegas at New Media Expo, and he was watching one of my presentations. This was in 2012, and I did something interesting at the end of that presentation. I did a reverse Q&A where I had people come up to the mic and they would ask me questions I would ask them questions.
Oh, right, okay.
instead of them asking me questions. And John was the first to volunteer. And then later I found out that his coach at the time was Jamie Tardy from Eventual Millionaire, who had suggested that he go to these conferences to talk to people and build relationships and to sort of get people excited about this brand that he was going to create. He didn't have a single follower at the time. And so he came up, I asked him a bunch of questions and I gave him some advice on this brand he was going to create, and he actually did it. And then later he came up to me and asked me to be a guest on his show. And I said, yeah, absolutely, because he seemed like a cool guy. And I guess, you know, I've just not necessarily been coaching him. I haven't even really been telling him what to do. He's been, like you said, just following along of what I do. And I feel like he's taken it even beyond where I'm at, because like I said earlier, I don't have any products or membership sites right now, but he has his own products, membership sites, and that's reflected in his income report. He's doing extremely well with those. And beyond that, he like you said, he has his own voice, and he's working like mad. And he was very smart in the way that he knew that podcasting was going to be big. He knew there was a hole in the fact that, you know, a lot of people have weekly shows, and you know, there are people that were just constantly waiting for new episodes. So he filled in that gap, and he created a 7-day-a-week entrepreneurial interview podcast, which nobody was doing. I mean, it was similar to what other people were doing, but it was in his own style, and he filled in that gap. He had his position knocked down, and he's been killing it. But, you know, I feel like there are differences between us. I mean, I have, you know, a family, two kids at home, and my you know, my why is them. So I spend most of my day with them. John, he's a maniac. And so he's working a lot, but
how old is he? Is he younger?
I believe he's younger than I am. Yeah. But not by much.
So he has not taken the step into, sometimes, I think that having two children as I do, and I guess you do two as well.
Two children. Yes.
Two. Yes. Half of you wants to work less to be with them, and the other half says, I better get to work because these things are expensive, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've sort of found a good rhythm now. I actually don't work at all during the day. I work at night when they sleep. But when I work at night, I make sure I'm the most productive, efficient person I can be.
Right. The after night time work was treasured for me for many years. And it's actually still is, because they're 9-12 now, but the house is chaos until I can get them to go to bed.
Okay. So I still have that to look forward to. My kids are 2 and 4.
Right. You're still early stages. You've heard this a million times, but you really got to treasure these times because they grow up so quickly. And you're like, how did that little baby girl turn into this 12-year-old?
Yeah, it scares the crap
amazing.
Out of me.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of, you know, so John does very well with his podcasting course. Again, a form of aspirational marketing. In essence, John interviews entrepreneurs, but he does it via podcast. So the natural inclination for his audience is to go, maybe I could do a podcast, you know,
makes
perfect sense. I happened to catch a recent episode of your show with David Siteman Garland, who is heavily into the online course world. He's a great guy, by the way. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that this is on your radar. Talk to me a little bit about that.
It is on my radar. You know, I have always been reluctant to have my own course just to have a course, you know, because that's kind of what everybody does. And that's a great way to make money, especially if you can have a recurring, you know, revenue to go along with that. But I've always just been like, you know, I don't want to force it on my audience. You know, I'm doing well with the affiliate marketing, things like that. But then, you know, of course, affiliate marketing, that's relying on other companies, you know, at any moment.
You don't own the customer relationship and, you know, you're doing really well. But for me, it was always the same thing. The next step is not only do you have the audience relationship, but you have the customer relationship, and that things exponentially happen from there.
Yeah. And I'm excited about that. And I also feel like, and I've gotten good advice from other people in the mastermind groups where, you know, I'm providing value on the site, but I could be enhancing the experience that, like you said, I bring people through to achieve their goals. And I might be doing my audience a disservice by actually not having a course, by actually not selling something where, you know, when people pay for stuff, they're more likely to go through and do it. And that was a sort of an eye-opening way to sort of look at it. And so
do you get that feedback from your audience? I remember, so when I started Copyblogger, different time, different place, you know, the concept of talking about selling with a blog made me the devil to half the blogging world. Of course,
right.
Look at where we are today. It's so commercial. But I went a year and 10 months without selling anything. And into that second year, people were concerned. They're like, why are you doing this? Why don't you sell something? On one end, and the other end was, please sell me something.
Right.
And that's a great place to be in. And I see you in that space in spades. I mean, you've been delivering value for 7 years now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, nothing's going to change on the front end of my site if I come out with a course.
Right.
It's just for people who want that enhanced experience, they're going to have that opportunity to do that through that course. So nothing's going to change. It's just going to be enhanced.
Yeah. Do you have any topical ideas you can share with us, or are we flying under the radar right now?
I mean, you know, there are a number of different things I could create courses about. And for me right now, and working with my team, which I just started to build this year, actually, and it's been amazing to work with other people to help take the brand forward. It's just kind of discovering what's first. You know, there's a lot of different angles to go, from affiliate marketing to, you know, niche sites. And I mean, there's all different ways to go. It's just a matter of picking which one's first.
It's like, you know, a problem of having too many options, right?
Right. And I know that I just have to pick one and go.
Yeah. But generally, you'll get the final inclination from the audience, you know, even if you don't ask them directly, because you never want to ask them what they'll buy, because often that won't turn out to be true. It's more like, what's their biggest problem? What can you help solve, right?
Yeah, and there's all these incredible strategies now that go along with selling a course. I mean, John has himself, he has pre-sold courses to validate the idea of creating that course. So he says, you know, hey, if I get this many customers, I will create this course, which is a really cool, smart thing to do.
Yeah, in 2007, our first product was an online course, and we sold it before it exists. This is way before Kickstarter or minimum viable products or anything, but it was really like, you know, we needed to make sure people wanted it, and we needed cash to take the next year to build it, right? So at the time, again, that was regarded as insane, but it's smart, you know? I mean, if you take an educated guess, you're probably going to make some sales, and if that's enough to justify going forward, fine. If not, worst case scenario, you know, you plead forgiveness and refund everyone's money, but thankfully that's never happened.
Right. Yeah. So courses are big for me this coming year. And, you know, I feel like if you want to truly provide value for your audience, you know, a course is definitely a way to go. It's the best way to get that experience through your brand and to enhance that the knowledge that they have through what you know. And, you know, just the way to deliver that content is a lot more organized than if it's just on the front end of a website.
So our mutual friend, Chris Ducker, you and he are up to something.
We are up to something.
So I know there's a pending announcement. This show will air maybe after that. Can you share anything with us or should we wait?
Well, I will share part of it with you. You know, Chris Ducker and I, he's a good friend. Whenever he comes to San Diego, he actually lives in the Philippines, but he travels quite a bit. Whenever he comes to San Diego, we do this sort of 20-person event where we have people, they pay to come and hang out with us. 20 people is all we could take. And we, for a whole day, put everybody in the hot seat, break down their businesses and build them back up. And we sort of just mastermind together. And then we have a nice dinner afterwards. It's always really fun. It's actually one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done. And Chris isn't actually traveling to the US as much next year. So we were kind of deciding, okay, how can we continue to work together and do this sort of thing where we're working with other entrepreneurs and everybody gets to learn from everybody else's example. So we decided, and this is going to sound crazy to you because we already talked about my two podcasts. We're starting a podcast together.
Okay, so your free time is about to be obliterated.
You know, you say that, but actually, no. I mean, I have completely outsourced all the production of all of my podcasts, and this one will be just the same. So all I have to do is hit record. And Chris and I, we talk on the phone every week on Skype anyway. Yep. We might as well make those conversations useful. And, you know, we're going to have people call in and share their business for 60 seconds and what they need help with. And then Chris and I are just going to go back and forth for 15 minutes, just like at these live live events that we do. And then hopefully this can help build buzz and promote something else that's happening later in the year for us as well.
So if any of you out there are skeptical about the power of podcasting, look no further than Mr. Flynn, because yeah. This will be number 3. Excellent.
4, actually. Oh, I don't know if you know, I have a podcast for my food truck.
That's right. I did see that. That's right. Interesting. Okay.
Which one of the shows actually got featured on the front page of iTunes.
Yeah. Nice. And don't think I notice every time, which is all the time, that your show is ahead of ours. So, hey, we're coming for you. We're coming.
No, bring it, Brian.
I know.
I'm looking forward to it.
Anyway, thank you so much for being here. This has been a treat for me just because I got all my questions that were kind of haunting me about, you know, where you were and where you're going and all that. But I think more importantly that everyone out there is probably has their head boiling over with ideas, which is wonderful. So thank you again. And maybe we can do this again in the future when you've instituted Pat 4.0, whatever phase you're on right now, with the online courses and all that good stuff.
Thanks so much, Brian. I appreciate it. And I just wanted to publicly thank you for all the inspiration. You and Copyblogger were one of the first blogs I started following back in 2008 when I got into this world, and it was a huge inspiration for me. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. I appreciate it.
Of course.